You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Keaton from Metal Fingers. Hey, Keaton.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hi, Keaton.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're super excited to chat with you today, but let's get it started. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and give us like a background on how you got into photography?
Yeah, so I'm Keaton. I run the YouTube channel Metal Fingers. I got into photography, man, like 10 years ago now when I just graduated high school. I was looking at what to study. Initially was doing journalism and realized I liked storytelling side, but maybe not so much the writing side as much.
Yeah.
Ditto.
Yep. So quickly found a camera, liked the storytelling aspect of that. Actually got into wedding photography during college and then finished up college and have been in the automotive space doing photography and videography and marketing as well, which has been very interesting. When I first got into it, I wasn't a big car guy or anything.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's slowly transitioned more into like an outdoors, automotive, off-roading, very kind of interesting niche, I would say, realm that I'm in now. And then just run the YouTube channel and have been pushing the Instagram, which is a lot of reels and stuff, more recently, which has been fun. I'm generally not a big short form fan. I like watching it, but editing it and making content for it was really not my forte. So Starting to transition to some of that stuff has been interesting and a fun challenge, I think. But yeah, now I'm based in Colorado doing a lot of automotive and landscape-based stuff, primarily on film. And then for my 9-to-5, obviously that's more digital because it's more conducive to a business workflow.
When did the film bug bite you? Did you start off on digital and then?
Yeah, so I started digital I actually got a Rebel T3i right after high school for a graduation gift. And probably like a year or two after that, honestly, probably when we started shooting weddings, me and my buddy started a wedding videography business, but we would just carry some film cameras just to shoot some kind of informal, you know, shots of the day, the bride, the groom, whatever, and then just give to them as kind of just a little gift. Here's an extra 36 shots or 72 or whatever. And then from there, I was like, you know, I like the intentionality behind the film. And I noticed I was seemingly getting better shots from just being more selective with the compositions. So I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna start using the film camera outside of like the workflow. And yeah, just started falling in love with that. And honestly, I don't really love editing digital photos a ton. So I feel like it kind of goes hand in hand where it's like, I don't have to do as much editing because I'm not shooting as many photos. There's a film stock kind of base involved. So yeah.
Yeah, it does make it so much easier having it kind of baked in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I know with Portra or Ektar, you know, certain film stocks, they're going to have a certain look that I can just do some easy stuff in Lightroom and it's got the look that I already like. And
Yeah.
So what made you transition for, do you still shoot weddings on the side at all, or is it more, you're all?
I would, I just think now with how much time Metal Fingers, especially YouTube, I mean, posting once a week, just it takes a lot of time. Yeah. It's like I'm already working 40 to 50 hours a week and then camping and trying to do like some outdoor stuff in Colorado. I moved here in April, so it's been almost a year now. And just having all this stuff out here compared to back home in Wisconsin, like all the mountains and ability to do stuff in them and whatnot. I feel like it's just, it's... there's only so much time in every day, you know what I mean?
I remember why I'm trying to, I was thinking about it before we hopped on here of when I started watching your channel, that I just always appreciate the work you put into the, to the video stuff that you do, because it's, I mean, you're always adding other people's photos and it's just, it's very nice to see that, because I think of it as like, you know, when you're sharing just your photos of that experience or that camera or that film stock, you know, it's pretty limited of what you can share. Show for something like that, so it's I just always appreciate you showing other people's work as well. It makes me happy to see what other people do with the stuff as well. So
well, thank you, I appreciate that. I know when I had first started the channel, I obviously had been watching a lot of like people who had made film videos at the time. Like Negative Feedback was the big one that I was really inspired by. George, I think, has had done a great job with the channel. I don't think he's posted it in a while since I don't know, the last even couple of years. But I liked the idea of, I was surrounded by, I had like four or five film photographer friends who I eventually ended up living with. And we had like a whole little studio and dark room and stuff in our house. So I was kind of just like, I'm around all these guys. We have all these cameras. There's always shooting going on. Why not just film some of it? And obviously devolved, we've moved on. Like I moved away from all those guys. So I was like, whatever, I'll keep the channel going. But yeah, I've always liked the idea of it being not necessarily like the Keaton O'Neill YouTube channel. And it's kind of like a branded channel that is, has a community behind it and has kind of like a feeling and aesthetic to it instead of just like my ugly mug, I guess.
I get it.
Yeah.
It's also been a, like a source of news. Like where do you, how do you keep up with all the, cause I like to think I've got my ear to the whatever, but your channel, I was like, oh shoot, I didn't know that was happening. What?
Yeah, honestly, I feel like I just follow all of like the film brands in the community, and then I just stay up to date on the subreddit. There's an analog community subreddit, and there's, I feel like people on Reddit are just so good at sleuthing and finding stuff. And for some of the gaming subreddits I'm in, there's like data mining where people are like looking at all of the, so like I feel like people on Reddit have some type of crazy detective work. And just with me understanding, having studied journalism in college, I was kind of like, I think I can package some of the film photography news into shorter, more, I guess, highly edited videos, kind of showcasing some of the photos and stuff. Like at the time when I had first started doing the, I guess, more news style videos, Nico, Nico's photography show, he was doing like a lot of long form stuff, which is awesome. But I understand, or I understood that like a lot of people don't want to sift through a 30 minute long video. So I was like, if I can kind of bring some of that information, but in a more condensed version, and then showcase some B-roll or whatnot to go with it, I think it would be a slightly more engaging experience. So I was like, I'll try a couple of those, and the views and stuff have been well. And so, yeah, I've just kind of rolled with that. Obviously, I love doing the camera reviews and in an ideal world, just like a hike where I'm showcasing my photography. But obviously, I understand there's only so much interest in that type of stuff, where with YouTube and, you know, the algorithm and the searchability, it's like having videos that are timely and relevant to certain stuff YouTube loves. So they've been good videos to kind of fill the gaps for when I don't have other videos. I mean, obviously filming film photography videos, there's so much like I have to think of an idea, go out and film it, and then send the film in, wait for the film to come back. Thankfully, I don't have to process any of it myself. There's a company in Kansas, Midwest Film Company, who they've been awesome and have worked with me to get most of my stuff now for the YouTube videos. But there's just so much, as you guys know, that goes into it to already like posting on Instagram, that it's like now editing a whole video behind it is just like a whole nother workflow in and of itself. So I think that helps with that too, where I don't really have to shoot photos for a video about the Role A35 It's just reporting the news, showing some of the photos, showing my opinion on it. And so
can I ask you some news questions?
Yeah.
So I watched your video on the new film cameras coming in 2025.
Yeah.
What are your predictions? Like, what do you think? Because to me right now, sorry, this is like way up off. Like, but are they really going to come? Like, are these cameras actually going to come out? Like the wide lux, like, looks so cool.
I know. That's a good question. I'm confident that they are going to come out. My question is just when. Mm-hmm. I feel like with so many things and with a lot of the film stuff we've seen recently, it's like people will say one thing and then it ends up actually coming to fruition 6 to 9 months later,
yeah.
Which I understand, like, there's marketing and stuff that you want to deliver on, but I also think there's certain, a reality. And I think that film photographers especially are kind of jaded in a lot of the newer products that have come out. We don't have to name names, but there's certainly been cameras or a camera that I'm thinking of recently that I think people have a very sour taste in their mouth from. That it is, you know, just a cheap Chinese rebranded camera and then upcharged by quite a bit. So I think that there's skepticism that these cameras are that. But I think with like the wide lux and stuff, Jeff Bridges doesn't really have a reason to be like ripping people off.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of money. Yeah. He's got a respectable name. I think kind of the same thing with this analog point and shoot camera that we've seen. I don't know a ton about the brand, but from what I've seen from other people talk about the brand, they seem like a very respectable brand, I guess, that has released products previously. Obviously nothing as ambitious as this camera. And I do think that their schedule, again, is probably a little overambitious.
Yeah.
But it does seem like the cameras are going to be created and come out. But like I said, I don't know when is my only, like, I guess, kind of nervous wrap up with them.
Something you were talking about, too, in the video about people being disappointed. It's like they want their cake and eat it, too. But it's like if things cost money to make and we... You know, I think we got spoiled in the beginning when we were getting, like, you know, Leica M6s for like $600 because like there was no our audience or like markets, but people thought it was done. So they were just like offloading stuff. And I think we're still stuck in the mindset that we're like, I want to pay this much money for a camera that retailed at $3,500 or whatever back in the day, and they want to spend no money. It's just not a reality. That bubble has burst. It's gone. We just have to, like, come to terms
with it. Yeah, totally. And I think for me, I'm 29, so I wasn't shooting film, you know, like when that was the only option. And I think for a lot of people that watch the channel, that's the same. There's a lot of people from at least the demographics from what I've seen, it's like mid-30s and younger to 18 or whatever seems to be like probably just over half my audience. So I think the good portion of people are in that same boat. And I think once I was looking into more about the cameras and realized, like, these cameras, when they retailed back in the day, when they, you know, first released, were not $200. Like, they were also a premium camera that went for a premium price. And that was during a time when there was the infrastructure, there was multiple factories and all this stuff to make that easier. And now we don't have that luxury. So I guess I think it's people's ignorance where they just don't know. Yeah. And I kind of chalk that up to a lot of the negative comments.
Yeah.
But that's why I try to just reinforce, like, the idea of, if just because you can't afford it or it's not the camera for you doesn't mean that it's a bad camera or a bad move or anything like that. Like, in fact, it's probably the opposite. Like, the fact that we're getting new cameras and new film cameras in 2025 is...
It's crazy.
Good. It's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah. Right.
And a lot of people that shoot the Pentax 17 really enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
So, people were pooping on that one, and it's like, it's not for me personally, but like, I'm stoked that people are stoked on it, you know?
Yeah.
We should be stoked to be stoked.
Right. You know? I know, and like I said in that video too, I was like, I would have loved to purchase the cameras. I can't afford them right now with just the circumstances of moving and whatnot. Like, believe me, in order to make content, I would have loved to have got the opportunity to showcase them, but I'm not gonna like badmouth them or like think that they're unrealistic or whatever. And I ended up actually getting a Rolly 35 AF from a subscriber. He sent it, and I had been testing it the last like probably a month and a half. And I actually really like the camera, other than loading it has been a little tricky.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous. I wasted one whole roll, which was, you know, definitely user error. But yeah, I think people just need to be a little more realistic with their expectations with some of the newer cameras that are coming out. And yeah, I get that there's been cameras that have kind of burned people in the past, but I think if you just do some research, there's ways to avoid that. And I think that most of the people that are like commenting and stuff like that are doing the due diligence of researching, and there's not really a need to be like commenting extra hate or
especially that when they're coming out with new cameras, that means that we have like tech support. Like if it doesn't work, we can get it fixed.
Yeah, that's important.
We're spending all this money on these like luxury point and shoots that like, when they stop working, that's it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that sucks, you know?
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people where it's like, who are just getting into film or don't know much about film cameras in general, I would definitely recommend getting something cheap to start to learn on.
Totally.
But then I understand wanting to, you know, if you only shoot film to a certain amount, or you only shoot a certain amount of film, and you want to make sure that each shot is getting the best possible circumstance, and you don't want to worry about having to load it or whatever, and you're willing to pay the premium price, then I think these cameras slot in perfectly for that. And I think kind of alluding to like the demographic of people that I've been that seemingly watch the channel, these, you know, younger people who want to shoot film as like a premium hobby, I'm kind of like, at first I was split where I'm like, you know, maybe buying a $400 camera is too much, but I'm like, also if they end up wasting a bunch of film and, you know, time developing whatever by having a manual camera that they don't really understand how to shoot, then you know, maybe some of these more modern point and shoots and modern cameras that can kind of hold the hand and teach them might end up being more worthwhile and save them more money in the long run, if that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I see it with in the musician world, you know, that they these companies make a cheaper student guitar, you know what I mean? And and everybody, you know, a shiny red guitar on the wall, you want to buy it. And it's just like you buy seven of these student guitars when you could have just held off and bought one like nice, you know, good guitar when and it's weird because the student level stuff are like a just say like a point and shoot that. That's what it does. It points and shoots. That will teach you so much to, like you were saying, to kind of get you to that hump of where, you know, purchasing, where you feel some confidence of purchasing a manual camera and, you know, learning the exposure triangle and doing all that crazy stuff. So it's just, it's weird. It's weird that we're getting all hot and bothered over the cost of things that, like we were just saying, you know, it wasn't cheap to buy a Contax T2 when the Contax T2, I mean, that they were called like doctor's cameras for a reason and stuff like that. Right. You know what I mean? They were expensive and it, but
how much did they cost when they came out? Do you know, Keen?
I don't know, actually. Yeah. It'd be interesting to know.
I mean, it feels expensive. They feel expensive.
Oh, it's, I mean, even, you know? I have the TVS, like it's, you know, stinky little brother, and that thing feels like a piece of art, you know, like a nice titanium heavy, beautiful point and shoot. I don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like it's kind of a fine line to ride because like it's good to obviously learn on manual cameras if you have the ability to, and like I've said, if you can just get a cheap manual camera and just shoot black and white so you can learn exposure and just understand like what's happening to the film in certain, you know, lighting situations, and then go from there, that's going to be your best like
start small
to get into film. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like there's a reason that high schools are still teaching kids on like manual SLRs, but I get that people are impatient, and with like the age of social media, people just want like the film aesthetic. So I get that these cameras are catering to that audience, and I don't think that there's like shame in that. Do I think it's like the best way to go about if you're trying to get good at photography? No, but I also don't think that that's necessarily like the end goal of a good portion of the user base of the cameras that these are, or the demographic that these cameras are, you know, trying to hit on.
Plus, like the, you know, the younger generation, they have a camera in their pocket all the time. Like to actually like, when you were saying you got your Rebel as a gift, like I remember getting my first camera, but it wasn't photography wasn't accessible like it is now. You know, it's not something that's, I can take, literally it's in our pocket every day. Every day I could shoot a movie. I could shoot, take a million photos, like fast too. Here's a piece of equipment that is meant to capture photography is just even separating the two like that, you know, and it doesn't have to be the most expensive thing, like we were saying. It could be just a cheap point and shoot. Even the act of like making it not your phone, I feel like, is a big deal.
Yeah, like and I think for me, like especially working in the industry, like I look at cameras as like all like as tools basically, and they fill a role for a certain job that I'm trying to do. Like even when I go skiing, I have the Kodak Ektar, which is like a $45 Amazon plastic camera. Yeah. But I'm like, if I fall and smash it and expose all the film on it, like, who cares? Like, it's not my $800 Contax T2. So yeah, I think people, if they think in that mindset too, like, you can kind of start to like understand the use cases for, you know, certain cameras. And I think with film cameras especially, they're like a lot easier to understand their strengths and weaknesses, where I think now, like, digital cameras are trying to be so good at everything. They're trying to be good at low light, video, photo. Yeah. So, yeah.
Man, I just think back to when, what, like 2010 to 2015, when I started getting back into film photography and stuff, or just getting into photography in general. That was kind of like, I did it in high school, yada, 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 but like really getting into it. The cost of film was so dirt cheap because it was on like a dying, you know, it was dying. Yeah. It was dead. You know, film was dead. So I think a lot of it has to do with that too, of where the cost of shoot, like buying film and getting film developed, and there's so much more investment on that end of it now too, of where it does make it kind of hard to want to drop $1,000 on a camera, because, you know, I don't even know what it costs to develop a roll of film and get it scanned, and I do all that stuff at home.
25 bucks.
So think of that. You know, you go on a vacation with your buddies, you barely know how to, you know, you don't know much about photography at all, but you want to take some photos, and then, you know, your five rolls are all black or underexposed, or, you know, you just kind of threw your money away there for a second. But it's just that I think that has a lot to do with the pressures of film photography now too, is just the cost of film and development as well.
I was before we got started, I was about to tell you about the roll I got today.
Yeah, you started to, and then we got sidetracked.
Not happy with it. Bunch of crap. And it, like, I mean, you know, when it still happens, and it's like, okay.
Yep.
Damn.
I mean, even now still, I'll shoot like a roll of medium format on my Mamiya 7. You know, it'll be like Ektar 100 at a beautiful location. And I'm like, I get the photos back, and I'm like, they're fine. But they're not like, they're not amazing.
The difference is when it does hit, like when you get a,
I think people just, they like, again, like hedging your expectations, where it's like, even like, I just saw a Todd Heido interview a couple weeks ago where he was saying, like, if he gets a roll of 35 back and he's got like three or four shots that he's satisfied with, not even portfolio shots, but just shots that he likes, that that's like a win for him. And I think that put it into perspective, where I was like, even guys who, like, I think are legendary photographers who do it like full time as an artist, essentially, they also like don't have like a crazy high percentage hit rate. Like, it's a thing that takes, it takes intentionality and it takes time.
Yeah. And I feel like with films, especially, where I didn't really like any of these shots, you know, and my Leica M6 is not loading properly. And I brought it to get looked at, and he was like, no, it's fine. And I'm like, the first four rolls are not, shots are not coming out. Anyway. So a couple were burnt that way. But if I get one really good one, I'm like, fine. And like, I feel like we're always chasing, like, okay, the next roll, it's because it's the anticipation, right? Like, I had to finish this roll. I had to wait till I get to the lab. I had to wait for them to come back. And to not be like stoked is like a huge bummer. This is probably the fifth time I've said stoked in this episode. Sorry, I don't know why this is my word today.
We'll take it.
But we're like, the next roll is going to be looking forward to it's part of the process, right? Like, looking forward to the next one. And I don't know. It's, for me, that's why I love it. You know, like, I'm not happy with this role, but like next time, you know, it's going to be great. And I feel like with digital, I don't know, you shoot twice as much. So it's like, if there's one in there, it's like not as fulfilling to me.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, you know, I mean, there's obviously different scenarios with that. But yeah, I don't know. That's why I enjoy it. That's why I shoot film. I don't know what you guys feel.
I think the same. I think, like I said earlier, with noticing how much I feel like better I was with fewer photos, having to edit less, it just like catered to like the workflow that I just enjoyed. And with me like doing doing photo and video for work and then wanting to do it outside of work, I feel like I needed to have it be fun still and not feel like I was like, it was like a means to an end essentially. So I think that that was a way to kind of like game it to be like a lot more fun of a workflow versus it feeling like I'm just like working after work, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think too, there's like definitely a certain like Christmas morning feeling that I kind of describe of getting your film back where it's like, all right, like what's in the presents? And yeah, I totally get though, like we were saying before, how I've had friends who try to start shooting film and they suck at first, which is fine. Like that's how it goes. Like when I first started, I sucked. Even I feel like if you shoot a bunch of digital, you are going to be better, but you probably are still going to be like fumbling through that first roll. You know what I mean? And I think people get discouraged, especially with the price point where it's like, I just bought a $100 camera, just paid $20 for a roll, now paying $20 for development and all these suck. And it's like, I totally get it. And I think it's one of those things where it's like the barrier to entry is just super high and you got to break through. It's kind of like skiing. I've been learning this year. Growing up, I haven't been skiing, but this year I started learning it and same. It's like, it's expensive. It's you know, like it's, you have to get up early so you don't get traffic, like it's long days and you suck for the first four or five times and it's super easy to want to quit. I remember Luke, the first day like 2 months ago, I was like, man, I just paid all this money for the lift tickets and all this, and but now that I'm like probably like 7 or 8 days into it, I like have got like my legs beneath me and I feel like it's a lot more, it's just more fun. And I think it's kind of the same thing with film photography where it's like, once you get the basics, which is why I say just shoot some black and white.
Yeah.
Because once you get that, you can implement that into like just how you're shooting, you know, color and kind of just like how you're seeing everyday life, starting to notice good lighting situations and stuff with or without the camera. And yeah, I think that's when the fun really starts like unveiling itself.
Totally.
And I feel like also it, like with weeding out, see, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say like weeding out the people that, you know, can't hack it. Because it's like hacking
you're
it
not
is
good
not
enough for this film photography.
Yeah, like
game,
it's not like that. It's just, I feel like there's some people get it and enjoy it and can work with it. And that's their like medium, you know, and it just works for them. And again, I think it does come back to like that whole price barrier thing of where it's not, you know, you don't, I couldn't even imagine like what, because I think of like Christmas time. It's like, this is what $100 a film looks like.
I know.
It's, you know, and it's like, I remember years ago, ooh, I'm going to spend $150 on film. And that's like, that was like months of film, you know, like that was just a couple bricks of Kodak, a couple this, that.
Yep.
And it's just weird that it just kind of isn't like that anymore. And I get it because that's just supply and demand, you know, like it just worries me. Like, I really hope that it doesn't, you know, watching your video on Kodak kind of like slowing down their machines and, you know, but they have to fix those machines to keep making more film or like upgrade them. And if they want it, it just worries me. Like, I really don't want this to go away. I remember what it was like when it was like, film's not dead. We're trying to like bring it back. We're that, you know, it's not dying. It's here. Here we are. And I don't know. It just, it worries me. It really, really worries me because if I would have to start shooting digital, like I just wouldn't, I think I have enough film in my fridge too, to last me a pretty damn long time if I want to continue doing this. So I'll be okay. But it just scares me because all my projects are based around this stuff. So like, I just hope that the machines keep moving. These companies keep doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Stop being so hard on everything, guys. It's, you know, come on.
Right. No, I feel the same way. And I don't think that like film is necessarily going to go away. I do think that there will be a point where like a lot of people could be phased out because of how expensive that they'll push it. Like I can't foresee Kodak like all of a sudden now shifting its business model to like something else. Yeah, which I mean, honestly, maybe for their betterment, they would be better off. But I do think though that hearing this news about Lucky's film and like...
Yes.
Even like Harman making like this red scale film and they're just seemingly like continued, I guess just movement forward with film, despite I'm sure it's not like the easiest financial investment for any of these companies. But I think that having these like competitors and companies that are seemingly like trying to bring film into this like new age, it feels like, with these new cameras and stuff, I think is a really good sign. I mean, even like 2 or 3 years ago when I was like, you know, first starting to really start making more videos for Metal Fingers, like the idea of a new film camera was just always kind of like laughed at, I guess, unless it was like, you know, like some of the cheaper disposable, I say in quotes, cameras that are, you know, made by whoever, Amazon or whoever, like these cameras you can just refilm with, but actual like film cameras that have glass and whatnot was always just laughed at. And even like, I feel like new film stocks, it was always, we were just losing them. So I'm like, any good news is, or any new news for film that's not bad news is good to me. Like, even if it's not like a film that I'm super like stoked to shoot up or shoot, or a camera that I'm super stoked to shoot, like it's still hopefully showing these other cameras, you know, maybe Fuji film and stuff, that there's still a market for this stuff, even if not them, like they could sell off some of their technology or whatever to someone who would be willing to. So I think that this year could be, I feel like I've said this the last 2 years, this year could be like one of the biggest for film if we see a lot of these projects come to fruition. And then hopefully it's like a compounding effect, which it seemingly has been, where hopefully 2026 we'll see some more companies that are willing to kind of stick their neck out there and hopefully bring us some new products too, which would be sweet.
Oh, yes, please. That's all I can say. But what's the future for Metal Fingers? Where do you see the channel? Are you going to stick with news, or are you going to put more of your personal work? Because I feel like there's a place for both. Don't share your work too.
Yeah, I think that's the in a perfect world, you'd be doing both. I like to do the new stuff. I think it keeps people informed and like entertained at the same time. I want to do some more personal work, more like camping and overlanding stuff. I think since I'm out doing that type of stuff for work, I'm in these cool remote locations. Why not film it? Like Thomas Heaton. I don't know if you guys know him on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
He does a lot of like van life landscape stuff. I think doing some of that on film could be really cool. So we'll see. I don't know. I want to do some more like collaborative stuff. I've been talking with Chris from the photo department to try to get out to LA to make some videos with him and maybe some of the other guys in LA. Like I was saying with the whole community thing before, I think just getting some other faces on the channel, maybe just in addition with me, would be great. Some of my buddies from back home are really talented photographers, so I would love to have them be on it more. I think they're a little video camera shy, but they're all very charismatic and funny in different ways. So I think that would be fun. So I don't know. There's a lot of different stuff I think I could do. One of the big things I really want to focus on is getting some of the short form stuff on Instagram locked in. I've been posting more on there the last probably 3 months. It's been a lot of like curated stuff that I've just re-edited, interviews from Todd Heido and stuff. A lot of like educational content that I think is good and people are seemingly enjoying and taking some good points away from. So I think adding some more original content on there, just some of me shooting. I know you guys just had Expired Film.
That's his name,
right? Yeah, I love his style of like POV where he kind of shows the camera, shows where he is, and then shows the photos. I think something like that while I'm like off-roading and camping and stuff would be cool. So I think just testing out some of the short form stuff, I think, is what I want to really spend some time this year. I've noticed that some of the especially film related stuff that will just be thrown into my algorithm will be like have tons of engagement and tons of really good feedback and stuff. So I think that would be really cool. I think I have a good workflow with the long form stuff. So try to push myself to try to do some of the more like TikTok based stuff that I don't love to do, but you know, unnecessary nonetheless.
Seems the way of the future.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I still like to sit and watch a nice long YouTube video.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, same. I mean, I don't watch a ton of narrative television or like Netflix or anything. I honestly watch mostly just YouTube at this point.
Me too. Wow. I was going to say, that sounds like you, Timothy.
yeah. And it's weird to just watch, like, if you're one of those, you know, where YouTube is your TV. Like, I spend so much time I'll occasionally go back and watch something on Netflix or, you know, Amazon. Yep, I've been back watching House again since I was sick in the hospital. I'm like, dude, House is awesome. So I'm watching this again. But the short form thing is a it just bums me out a little bit, but I understand why it's so kind of important right now, because that is our attention span. Like, a minute is like what we get these days. Yeah. So, but then there's also, like, you know, like Jason Cumberfeld and like Willem has been doing these like 2 hour long videos and stuff, and they're fantastic. Like, there's nothing better than just throwing one of those on and, you know, working around the house or just I just love that stuff. So it's weird how YouTube has changed so much since, you know, even when I started with posting videos all the time and stuff. It's just it's weird how it just grows and evolves, and now we're all stuck on little short form videos. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah. And I know for a long time I was like refusing to download TikTok because I was like, I don't want to succumb to like another social media and like, you know, everyone's attention span just getting shorter from, you know, shorter form content. But then once Instagram implemented Reels, I was just like sucked in. So no, I totally get it. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's something to be said for a balance of both. I think having like almost like junk food type content that's like the short form, and you can just like eat a couple chips whatever. And then there's like the long form video where it feels like I gotta sink in. I'm like making a meal, but it's gonna be like healthier for my whatever mind, whatnot. So that's something I want to try to do too, is I'm glad you called those guys out. I think those like 2 hour long videos are so awesome, and the fact that they have like enough photos that are worthwhile showing. It's just like, I'm like, man, I try to make an 8 minute long video and I'm like, all right, like that's all the photos I got, good and bad. That's it. So yeah, that's amazing.
Man, that's why I wanted to ask you about your photos too, because I know when I was trying to do YouTube and all that stuff all the time, I would basically just shoot for YouTube. Like, any sort of other photography stuff just kind of goes to the wayside. Do you still shoot personally just for you? Are you out like, you know, are you a camera in your bag every day kind of guy? Like, just shooting to shoot? Or is it like specifically for YouTube? How have you been doing your photography recently?
Yeah, so I think it's a balance of both, where like there's sometimes where I'll go out on a work shoot where we're shooting like product photos of a certain kitchen product or whatever that we sell, and I'm like, this is not worth bringing the film camera. Versus like, we were just on a like 10 day long camping trip in Arizona and Utah, and I was like, well, I'm sure there's gonna be cool stuff along the way, so I'll definitely bring the film camera. As far as shooting for like personal or YouTube, I feel like I generally at this point like shooting medium format more. So I tend to shoot my Mamiya 7, like just stuff that is, you know, landscapes or whatever. I'm obviously way more picky with those photos just because you only get 10 per roll, and I don't want to be sending in a ton of rolls like that. And I feel like as of recently, I've been shooting a lot more of this Nikon FM, which I really liked. It was my good buddy's, and he let me borrow it for like a month while he came out and visited. And then I was like, I'm just going to keep this. So I feel like those are the two cameras right now I'm just shooting for like my own personal, just like whatever informal stuff. And then I'll generally try to have like YouTube videos somewhat planned out. So like, for example, when I went on this camping trip, I was like, okay, I'm going to shoot a Rolle 35 AF video and shoot just as many rolls as I can of that. And then also shoot a review of the Pro Image 100 rolls, or just film stock in general, because I feel like no one ever talks about the film stock.
It's such an underrated film.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'll just shoot that in the Rolle. It can be two videos over the course of a week. There'll be enough footage and photos and stuff. And then I was just shooting the FM and the Mamiya 7 just haphazardly. And I feel like that's kind of like my model for shooting, I guess, is I'll try to have like a project camera and then a camera or two that's just for shits and giggles, I guess.
Smart. I like that.
I always get curious because I realized like when I was shooting for YouTube and stuff, I just wasn't shooting anything project based wise. Like, I like to work in a project, you know. I like, this week is so and so, I'm out shooting this feeling, or that. It's just how I've always felt. And I know that when I was really trying to do video content, it would always kind of get in the way. But like, I love that work, but what do you do with that stuff? I guess it's just kind of like a hit you have to take if you want to, you know, create YouTube videos and stuff. You just have to
I think for me, it's like, I don't have like a long form project that I'm like trying to shoot or like aiming to create or anything at this point. Like, I don't feel like I have like a definitive, like, I don't want to say voice, but like thing to say in a photo book or like, you know, whatever. So I'm just, I guess at this point, I'm mostly just shooting for good portfolio shots in general, and then just use YouTube as kind of like the project. And I think that that kind of helps keep that side a little more grounded, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Where that kind of scratches that itch of like, even if I don't make a lot of good shots, let's say, like, I'm still testing out this camera for the video, which I can finish, and there's like a definitive, like, the video gets wrapped up, there's a thumbnail, it gets pushed out, I'm done with it, like, I can move on. Like, I feel like when I was in college, I would end up making a lot of like fun experimental videos and films and stuff, but then just would never release them. And I feel like it's very satisfying now, being kind of like the opposite side, where I'm like very anal about like, okay, this is done, like, this is good enough. Like, I've worked enough on this. I've put the bells and whistles that I want. I'm going to like push it out. It's on to the next project. And it kind of just keeps me moving along. And yeah, I think it's a good workflow in that
You're
sense.
You're making me miss the feeling of like uploading a new video.
Uploading
into the
is
world.
So fun. It's such a
You're
fun.
Like, it's out. It's out.
The best is when I'm like sitting in the YouTube studio and I see there's like 5 weeks of videos scheduled out. And I'm just like, I've done it.
Yeah.
But obviously there's other times, like now, for example, when I'm like I don't have anything to post for Sunday, which is fine. But I'm like, all right, what can I work on this weekend? So like next week I have something. And I think it gets a little like stressful when I run into like bottlenecks like that. And especially with, you know, film, it's easy to, the lab takes an extra week or whatever. Yeah. And now all of a sudden I'm off schedule, which is no fault to, you know, anyone. Yeah. But it's just the semantics of working with film, I guess.
Totally.
We'll be right back with listener question for Keaton right after this message from our sponsor.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Just wanted to pop in quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We talk shop. We develop some film. We also try to get former guests for these. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, it's the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from The Quiet Pages. And they ask, you have to shoot one format for the rest of your life and still pay for it. Which one?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I mean, obviously, like, economically, I want to say 35. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like my heart is still saying choose 6x7, 120. Ooh. So I feel like that's going to be my... That's going to be my choice, which will be a little foreshadowing for the future potentially. Yeah. But I just think, I don't know, kind of like I was saying earlier, I think the limitation from digital to film, from infinite photos to 36 or 24, even then to medium format from 36 to 10 photos on the 6x7, I feel like I'm very intentional and very methodical, I guess, with the shots. And for me, since I'm not necessarily like making photos for a long form project, I think getting nice big negatives so I can make prints just for like myself or my friends and family and stuff is, I guess, a higher priority than not, in a sense. So I think that, the 6x7 like fits everything I need it to be. Of course, I would love there to be more shots per roll. Ideally, we would have 220 film again.
Bring back 220. Come on.
I know, right? Reflex brought back their 220. I don't know. It might have been just a limited run. I think they still have it, but it's only in one of their film stocks. But Man, yeah, having some 220 of some Kodak professional film would be...
I know.
That'd be awesome.
I have a couple rolls of Portra 160 and 220 somewhere in the fridge. I'll have to dig those out. And this like off-brand Konica film somebody gave me a Ziploc baggie full of 220 film, and it's just like weird off-brands that, other than the Portra, but I really got to shoot that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be curious to know how old they are,
too. But yeah, and they're shucked, so they're all ripped out of the plastic, so I have no idea what...
I hate that.
...what kind of, you know, age or who knows, but it's, you know, chuck it.
That scares me. I was watching or listening to the previous episode you guys did with... What was his first name again? Miles, yep. And how he was, like, saying how much he loves shooting expired film, and I was just like, I don't know. For me, it gives me anxiety.
I don't have a heart for it either.
Like, yeah, especially, I mean, I would think especially with him doing sports too,
I know.
That moment's only going to happen. I feel like that when I'm like hiking and it's like a nice sunset and I'm there for like 20 minutes, let alone like a literal slice of, you know, moment in time. Yeah. So I'm like, I remember shooting some expired film when I first started shooting and was just like... This is too unpredictable for me.
Yeah, it can get real wacky. I had somebody gave me like a bin full of old Fuji like Superia and stuff like that. Mm. And I shot a couple rolls of it and it was just so distorted and weird. It's just amazing what can happen, you know? Yeah. But again, it's one of those things of, I was talking to one of my coworkers about, he thought it was neat. You know, but and it was like, why do people shoot expired film and take the risk and stuff like that? And it's just like, it's like lightning striking, you know, imagine having like an amazing goal kicked into, you know, on some crazy film that looks totally bizarre. It's like, of course you can go into Photoshop, throw some layers on there and make it look all weird and as crazy as you want. The fact that it's like a Yahtzee roll is amazing. It's so neat.
Yeah,
I get it, but damn, it's scary as hell.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, not for me. I mean, like you said, I get the appeal, but I'm like, it's already, like I said, I already have enough tough time getting like four or five photos on a 35 millimeter roll that I like. It's I don't want a chance that those are going to be all of a sudden ruined by some weird artifacting or something.
Yep.
Well, great question. Thanks for sending that one in. It's a good segue into our question that we have for you.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of having to pick one thing forever, if you had to pick one camera for the rest of your life, what would it be? If you're on a desert island, what would it be and why?
Yep. So it would definitely be the Mamiya 7.
Mm.
I think hands down that camera has been my favorite of any camera I've ever used, digital, film, 35, medium format, anything. I think just like the ergonomics of it and like how it feels in your hand and just feels the shoot, how quiet it is, how fluid the advance is, the sharpness of the images. I haven't actually shot the whole slew of lenses, but one of my buddies here in Denver, he's got, I think, three of the lenses.
Oh, nice.
And his name's Santo Marco. I don't know if you've heard of him or anything, but he's on Instagram. He's got a really awesome photos. He's got some really great landscape stuff. That's pretty much, you should check him out. He would probably be great to have on the episode too.
Sure.
He's got some really cool camping stories and stuff too. But yeah, the Mamiya 7 is just, I don't know, there's like some magic where I feel like when I'm somewhere beautiful with that camera, like the photos just, like it does the work itself, if that makes sense.
Totally.
I've only ever held one. I haven't gotten a chance to like
Yeah, I still haven't even held one.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, I remember when I was first looking at buying one, I was just like, oh my gosh, like they're obviously so expensive and it was the most expensive camera, still is the most expensive camera I currently own, like more expensive than my digital camera that I use like for work and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm still, I just am like, the camera is, I've taken, I think by far the best photos I've ever taken on that, both portraits, landscapes, and like even lifestyle stuff. I'm just like... It's so good. It's so easy to use. And I feel like it's kind of the same. I've never shot with a Leica at all, but specifically like the M6, I think kind of the same thing where if you haven't shot with it, people are like questioning the price tag and like, how could it be worth it? But I think once you actually, you know, shoot some rolls with it and kind of play with the workflow, it's like, I totally get it.
I love that in the video where I think it was like your photography hot takes where you're just like, people are like, man, if M6s were $300, nobody would buy them. It's just, it's like, are you serious? I'd have seven of them if they were $300.
Yeah, I know. Some of the comments, I was like, I feel like this is like, just trolling, like trying to get me to like,
I love that. That was a great series. I hope you keep doing those. That's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good segue into the next part of the question.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything that is your white whale? Any cameras you're lusting over, searching eBay, Craigslist? What do you got your eye on?
It's a good question. Honestly, I feel like in terms of like cameras for me personally, I feel like I'm pretty set. I feel like I have the Mamiya 7. I have like an RB for portraits. The FM is perfectly fine for me for 35. I have the Contax T2 for point and shoot. So I'm kind of like, I don't know what else I would really want. Obviously, I would love to have like a rotating camera for the series that just is a new camera. Yeah. So maybe I get like, I don't know, an X-Pan and be like, is the X-Pan actually worth it? Shoot with it for a month and then sell it and buy something else.
Well,
and,
you know, there's a website you can rent a film objective. I think they have the X-Pan up out there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of them.
I should do that. That's a good idea.
Shout out to Adam and Film Objective. We'll link them for you.
Sweet.
Yeah, so that would be a good way to try before you buy.
Yeah, I feel like trying to think about it, there's no camera that I'm like dying to really try. Thankfully, most of my friends, like the guys that I lived with, they all had a variety of different cameras. Yeah. My one buddy, he had two different Leicas. My other friend, he was big in the Bronica systems. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I was able to at least see the cameras in action, a lot of them. Yeah, maybe an X-Pan. I guess that would be the only thing. I feel like that would be the one that's like just wildly different. But they're like, what, $6,000?
Bonkers. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe honestly one of the new wide luxes. So that would be cool too. Oh, getting one of those and missing it out and just seeing how that works, just because it's so different and so like novelty to a certain extent with how the camera works and stuff, would be, I think, an interesting challenge.
Wide lux would be fun. Just looking at Jeff Bridges' books, you know, it's the photo panoramics have always been so intriguing to me. I would love to get into that world as well. Yeah.
I think his photos too make that camera like, I'm just imagining me getting that camera and the photos being not very good. And it's like seeing his photos, they're perfect. They're like on a cinematic set where people are in costumes or like the one photo I love where I feel like people are always commenting is where it's him kind of taking like a selfie and in the background there's a hanging guy
totally.
From the tree.
Yeah.
And that photo's just like so jarring and it's so like, I don't know. It's,
man.
His photos are great, to say the least.
Totally.
Good answer.
Yeah, it's a good place to be where you're not driving yourself crazy looking for a camera.
I only seem to hang out there shortly, and then before I'm like, no, man, I want a Rolleiflex.
Right.
But I already have a Hasselblad square format, so I can't do that, but it's just like...
Right.
The whole,
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to the Mamiya 7, how it's like, I've owned that camera for... like 3.5 years, I want to say. And I'm still like...
smitten.
In love?
In love.
I love it.
Awesome. What do you think? Anything else, Timothy? This has been great. Thank you for getting us back on the horse. We've been on a little break hiatus here. So this was a good episode to talk shop. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is super fun.
Where can everybody... this is where you plug yourself. Where can everybody find... your YouTube, Instagram, where you at?
Yeah, so on YouTube, if you just search Metal Fingers Film, you'll find it. Same with Instagram. And then my personal photo stuff is bazooka_mouth. So pretty easy. If you just search Metal Fingers, you'll either find MF Doom, the rapper, or
Cool.
Timothy, where are you?
Guys, Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups. There's still a bunch of YouTube stuff floating there. Easiest way to find that, just go to the search bar, type Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of my videos there, timothymakeups.com. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I am Crispy Photo on all of the things. Yeah, I'm inspired. Maybe I want to get back to you. It's been like over a year since I've done YouTube. So that you've been. This is a good episode to talk like, ooh, I missed that upload feeling. So stay tuned. And then we are Analog Talk Pod
Nope.
We're Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Threads.
Yep.
That's us. It changes. Social media's been out. Changes. We're not on Twitter anymore. We're this is that and that.
Yeah, I know. It's tricky.
It's crazy. Anyway, thank you, Keaton. This has been a blast. We appreciate what you're doing with the channel. We can't wait to see where it goes.
Definitely.
And yeah. We'll see you in the next one, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.
All right, that's going to wrap it up. Chris and I would love to thank Keaton from Metal Fingers for coming on this week's episode. Thanks so much, Keaton. We love what you're doing with the YouTube. We love the news. We love the reviews. It's just a ton of fun. Definitely keep those hot take videos coming. It's so good. So funny. But again, we love what you're doing. We can't wait to see what the future holds for your work, your YouTube channel, all that stuff. And thanks again for taking the time to hang out. Thanks, Keaton. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our develop and hang over there and a bunch of stuff in the archives. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. For all the patrons out there that already support the show, guys, thank you so much. We do not know what we would do without you. All right, it's great to be back. Thanks again, Keaton, for coming on the show. Thanks to you guys for listening. And yeah, we'll see you next week with an all new episode. All right, later.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.